Hey, everybody. As the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sanity in the 21st century. This is Phil Lairness, reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition. And you have entered the podcast zone.
We're off. The Midweek Drive has actually merged. There we go. And we see that basically Paul Powers, proving that he's a member of the Cybernaut Club, in fact, founding member of the Cybernaut Club, from the east coast of England. He's at, of course, the wonderful Anglia Ruskin environment, is Mr. Computer. We've got Paul Powers in duplicate Philip Herdwood. Isn't that exciting?
No, I'm astonished. This is almost like, you know, something out of a science fiction film, isn't it? You know,
genuinely, sir.
I'm loving it. I'm actually loving it. This is a first for silent radio, I think.
Well, I like to feel that radio, television without the pictures, it's just a whole range of new activities that we're putting together.
I couldn't agree more.
We may well
listen. I've not met you before, Paul. Tell us about yourself. Apart from looking stunning with that wonderful beard. I had well up until a few weeks ago. What do you actually do? Where are you based?
I'm currently based down in King's Lynn. I'm living in Norfolk since June 2019. Right. I moved down here to work at the College of West Anglia. I got a job here as course director for Level 2 Computing and ICT. Right. And I also teach for Anglia Ruskin University in computer science on their honours degree.
Wow, gosh. Yeah, all stuff which goes way over my head, way over my pay grade. Anything that I'm working on which involves anything to do with IT or developing stuff and, you know, all the rest of it, I just have to say, I don't know how you do this. I just don't know anything about it. I'll look at it and say, that looks good. I like the look of that, but I can't actually construct
any of
it.
You know the line. What you have to say is, say it with conviction. As long as you say it with conviction, that is the actor's mantra. That's very important.
Absolutely. And I know what I like by it.
Precisely. We can also welcome an undergraduate from the University of Lincoln making his debut on a production. He's a keen performer when it comes to community radio, though, in Cambridge and thereabouts, I think, Sydney Arts. It's Tom Davis. How are you, Tom?
Hi, Tom. How's it going? Hang on, I'm just going to turn my video on.
Well, we're chilling, we're sorting our way through, and there we are, Tom Davis in person. Wow, this is great. Actually, because of social distancing, this is one of the first times I've actually seen Tom face-to-face. It's strange enough, even though I'm his tutor. You know, it's great.
I often had that remark made to me when I was at university. I haven't seen you, this is like week 12 of a unit, you know, and it was like, I haven't actually,
better late than never.
Old days, old times. But anyway, gentlemen, we're all here. It's an all-male Midweek Drive for a change. So let's actually motor on. One of the topics of the conversation I want to actually share with people tonight is, Philip, embarrassing moments, okay? Embarrassing moments when you're actually interviewing people and you sort of think that it's a big fan. There's a key sort of aspect they've chosen. You've built up the time to actually sort of ask the question, etc. Everything's actually looking wonderful. And then suddenly you kind of sort of build up to your thing tremendously. And then you think, oh no, I've asked somebody who's been in a certain well-known series and they hated it. All the things they could have possibly actually dealt with, this was like the most embarrassing thing you could have ever asked them at all. Have you ever experienced anything like that, Philip?
Oh, gosh, no, I've only ever interviewed one person, and that was for you, on your behalf. It was Paul Daniels, the television magician chap, who I believe came from the Middlesbrough area at one point. he was ever so nice. And I don't know quite why, but you asked me to... He apparently was coming into the studio or something, and he was doing a show that night in the area, and you said, Phil, can you interview him? So I'm sort of thinking, what the heck am I going to say, you know? Yeah. And in fact, he was absolutely charming and delightful and totally professional. Yeah. And it was great. And I was able to just flow with it and just ask questions about, how does it feel to come back to Middlesbrough? You know, all this sort of stuff.
All that. I mean, he's dead now, but it had nothing to do with your interview. So I just want to clarify that.
I would certainly hope not. Yeah. Otherwise, I might have said, didn't you used to be Paul Daniels?
Exactly. And if he's on the show now, it would be real magic in all sorts of ways.
It's magic. You won't like it, not a lot, and all that.
Likewise, again, there are always sort of moments where we sort of come around to this whole side of things where possibly you're sort of thinking, well, you know, what are things which maybe could be seen as a faux pas? You know, a kind of classic sort of momentary sort of aspect of sort of mistakes, which you think, well, maybe actually this shouldn't have actually been there. Maybe actually if you just kind of associate certain key areas that are sort of developed, maybe you'll actually see a sort of situation that refers to that. And I mean, I think, Thomas, you might be able to sort of identify with one of those clubs who are really great and the other sort of club that basically aren't so great. I mean, would you actually share some of the pain I'm kind of making you revisit here as in my capacity as your tutor, really?
Yes, well, I'm on the side that isn't so great. And absolutely, I spent that 90 minutes watching our team get tore apart. and it's
clearly,
pretty sad to watch.
As a Manchester City follower, City till I die, obviously, you know, a bit of tension, but we got there in the end. That's the important thing. As you might imagine, Thomas, quite pleased with the result. Let's hope we do it against Chelsea. I like to feel we'll be beating Chelsea for all Spurs fans. That's the important thing.
Certainly be a City fan
from
that one.
Yeah, you'll be beating them for football fans everywhere, I believe.
This is so true. And then we fly over to the joys of California to meet the other Phil. The other Phil who's just connected to audio now, otherwise we'd have to lip read the whole thing. Phil Leonis, welcome back, sir, to the Midweek Drive, all mail edition. How are you?
Oh, you mean we're going to be reading letters from listeners?
Yeah.
No, precisely. Not that kind of mail, Phil, but it could be. That could be another slot we could invent.
Do you know, actually, between Philip Herdwood and Phil Leonis and myself, I think we've clocked up around about 300-odd midweek drives across the years and the decades,
probably,
really.
Nice
to work
through
that.
Can I just ask an embarrassing question? You appear, Alexius, to be wearing a tartan tam o'shanter.
Yes.
I don't think
anybody
else can see that. Which is actually very... I thought so.
But again, moving back to obviously where we were just a matter of moments ago, when of course we were flagging this up. Now, you might sort of think, oh, it's a Hollywood sort of stuff. This is obviously sort of going to be focusing on the joys of our Hollywood correspondent, Phil Leonis, etc. I mean, Phil Leonis, have you ever been in a situation that you've kind of really psyched yourself up to do an interview with a celebrity about a show that he might have been on, you know, and working that? And actually, it's the worst show that they were ever sort of there. And it's just, where did I go wrong? Oh, no. You know?
No.
Right. Succinct.
In fact, yes.
I used to
make behind-the-scenes documentaries. When DVD was a new format, it was very popular to have these behind the scenes making of featurettes on all of them until they realized no one would ever watch them. And most of the movies that I was making these making ofs about were terrible, terrible movies. Just, I mean, utterly dreadful, just cannon fodder of the worst kind. I realized very early when I was thinking, how do I ask these celebrities questions? How do we pretend that this stuff is worthy and not just a payday? It occurred to me very early on, wait a minute, it's every bit as hard to make a bad film as it is to make a good film. And nobody sets out to make a bad film. So what is it when you're in the process and part of your voice is telling you this dog won't hunt? How do you keep lifting that Sisyphean creative boulder up the hill day after day? And the truth is, it's no different than when you're making a great film, because you can't show up one day and say, boy, that stuff we did yesterday, last week, it's great. Because the moment you start looking back, now you're falling behind on the task that's in front of you. So it was really about, no, just drill down more into the process and the joys that come out of making creative work, regardless of what the end result may or may not be. And then the other issue of it, Alexius, is that no matter how bad something is, people like it.
Sometimes, yes.
Yeah, no, they do. No matter how awful, how irredeemable, how incompetent something is, people still voted for Trump. So you never know. And so you just try to kind of ease that out and you go to, you know, what's interesting, which really is the passion that people bring to a process, because so much is out of your control anyway. And even when you've done something that's really good, odds are, if it's really good, it's ahead of the time anyway, so it's going to take a while for people to catch up to it.
Yeah, that's very true. And I loved what Noel Coward said when he went backstage after a performance of a particularly bad play. And he went backstage, and of course the actors are all thinking, oh my God, it's Noel Coward. What's he going to say? What's he going to say? They said, well, I used to call him Master, was his sort of nickname. He said, well, Master, what did you think? And he said, oh my dear, he said, what can I possibly say?
So true, but listen. Enough of
oh,
such. Look,
good Lord, that's oh, good heavens! That's something I was in.
One of how these people is Robert Stevens. The other
I'll
one,
be damned.
Birdwood in Year of the French. Is that not
well,
so?
I'll be blessed. I've, good grief! God, that's a blast from the past, isn't it?
Well,
good
heavens. You see, I like to feel as though we're raising that level of the radio show to being a radio show with even more pictures. You know,
good
which is important.
I'm astonished.
And as you can see, Philip Hurdwood, they're very much epitomising a young Roger Moore, I feel, in his kind of role. Philip, what was your role in this particular one, and why was Robert Stevens looking so bemused in that particular
show? I was the head eyebrow lifter, as a matter of fact, in the Roger Moore film. No, Robert, we were playing brothers, believe it or not. We were playing very wealthy Irish Catholic landowners, which was an unusual thing, in 1798 when the action took place, based on a historic episode when the French forces joined with the native Irish people to essentially kick the Brits out of Ireland. It was a failed mission because the first convoy of ships that came across from France were blown off the coast by some storms, and they weren't able to land. Some couple of years later, they did manage to land. A new expedition was mounted, and some ships arrived, by which time the British forces had increased their military presence. But it was a very close-run thing, and the Irish damn nearly won. It was only on one battle, which would have... And the Irish were beaten. But had it not... been the case, and that the Irish had won, it would have changed the course of European history forever.
We might have still had the colonies, Philip.
Well, Ireland would have become a satellite of France, and that would have affected European politics and world politics for the rest of time. But yeah, so we were playing brothers, and my character went on to become the first president of Ireland, of the Republic of Ireland.
There you are now.
So Robert and I played brothers, bless his heart. He was a wonderful actor, National Theatre actor, and husband of Maggie Smith at one point, and people like
and also,
that. Yeah, he was
also now in heaven with Paul Daniels, magician, of course.
They're swapping anecdotes about me as we speak.
I would have thought so. So the bottom line is, Phil Lillis, you may sort of be bemused a little. I mean, when have you not been bemused? Let's face it, bemused can be your middle name. But in terms of this, why not only do we have two Paul Powers within this sort of environment? We have a Paul Powers who's looking right at camera, and we have a Paul Powers set up in his Cybernaut studio. I know, two Paul Powers and one Tom Davis, who, as well as being a Spurs supporter, is flying the flag for Lincoln City because he's a true Lincoln City imp. Exactly. Let's hope we get promotion to the championship as well from that point of view. But also, why Seinfeld? Paul, would you like to share with the team why I've been nudging in this direction of having a Seinfeld backdrop there, you know, in terms of one of your favourite shows and how it all went pear-shaped for a few moments a few weeks ago with Armin Shimerman?
Well, thank you very much, Alex. So, as you can see, you've got, twice the power tonight, because I was sick of having mic issues and I was sick of being caught out. So I've got one on my phone and one on my machine. So, you know, I've got to have a backup. So
you do have that honor, Paul. You're the first person we've had in the nigh on 1,000 Zoomers we've done over the last year.
This is called Belt and Braces Radio, isn't it?
Exactly. who's actually got two channels working. That's genius.
Unbelievable.
Anyway.
So with Seinfeld, I believe that you've got that up because... because it's an amazing show. And that's about it. No, actually what happened a couple of weeks ago was I had the good grace and good fortune to meet via Zoom Armin Shimerman, and all day I've been thinking, wow, Armin Shimerman, he plays the caddy in the episode of Seinfeld. So I was really excited to ask him about that. And I believe his words were something along the lines of, that was the worst experience of my life.
This is true. But it's all right. He forgives you. He's back with us again next week. All will work well. Great. I mean, Phil Leaders, I could tell you, raising your eyebrows there, you know, eerie about Armin, etc. You know, Paul homing straight in on Seinfeld as a sort of a treat personified. What would you like to ask? And to who would you like to ask it?
I just would throw out, at the risk of being overprepared, sometimes it does behoove us to research the question we're going to ask first. You know, it's a little bit like a courtroom. Yes, you want to get to know the person, and at the same time, never ask a question you don't know the answer to. There is a, maybe until you know that there's a rapport built up in that certain, but boy, to lead with a question that you didn't know the answer to is, that's dangerous, my friend. It's dangerous.
But Phil, how could he not enjoy it? You know, I just, they look like they're having so much fun on the set, you know, when you
people
watching it.
Hated that show. Everything is about how hated it was. Like them killing off George's fiance because they wanted to kill off the actress who played the part. I mean, it was like Hollywood at its best, a seething pool of hatred and backstabbing.
Beautiful. I'm glad that I can be on the fringe of that, just by bringing up those painful memories.
Here's a Seinfeld story for you. Not Seinfeld the sitcom actor, but Seinfeld the stand-up comic. Wow. He was also a sitcom actor. He he flew into Seattle, was driving up to British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia, beautiful country, to do a 1 hour live set there. And then he was going to come back. So they stopped him at the border and they said, what's the purpose of you coming in? And he said, well, I'm coming in to do a show. Are you getting paid for this? Yes, I'm getting paid for this. How much are you getting paid for this? He said, $100,000. They said, $100,000. And he said, hey, I'm working a whole hour.
That puts it all into context. Well, I heard a story similar. We have a series, you may know, Phil, in the UK called Coronation Street, and it's a long-running soap. It's been running since Noah was a kid, and it's been really running a long time. Anyway, and one of the actresses or actors was in Hollywood and chatting away to another actor who was in another American soap, and the kind of the issue of the subject of money came up, and she said, how much do you kind of make with these American soaps? And she said, oh, it's about $150,000. And she said, not a bad salary. And she said, that's an episode. And the English girl thought, well, that's what I'm getting a year.
I would like to just backtrack and say, you know, obviously the whole of Seinfeld was a miserable experience, but it is one of those shows where the tone is so unique. And the process of getting to that tone is so refined, that if someone came in and was on the outside of that for whatever reason, it's already a difficult thing to be a day player as an actor. Sure. I'm sure Phil
never been a day player, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know, but when actors come in, you see what it's like.
Well, it's spot the day player. You watch that on a film and you see somebody who's shaking, and, you know, like the Laurence Olivier story, when there was a day player came into one of his films and one of the ones he was directing, and this poor actor was crapping himself. He was shaking like a leaf. And every time he tried to get the words out, he'd stumble over the words, and that was it. All he had was one scene, one day's filming. And Laurence Olivier said, for goodness sake, he said, relax! And the guy just melted into a jelly, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, yelling at people to relax is my favorite thing to do, quite frankly. It's tough, and especially the longer running the show is, because now you have not only the cast, but you have a crew, and it's a family, and you're being dropped in as an utter outsider. Yes, Armin Shimerman is someone with a great amount of experience, and of course skill, but experience, But that experience probably extends only so far as to keeping your composure. It doesn't necessarily allow you to fit right in to the particular shorthand, the particular tone, the particular process.
The dynamic and all that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It can be very tough.
Phil, you've just got to actually consider the kind of rigorous selection process we actually put people through so that Tom Davis can actually join us today. I mean, it's his first show, for goodness sake.
I was about to say that, actually. I'm sitting there listening patiently.
Never ever heard of Seinfeld, but what the hey? Have you heard of Seinfeld, Tom?
I don't know.
Exactly. See, so that puts things in perspective, Paul. At the end of the day, Seinfeld, youth of today, never even heard of the show. So there we are. It's a different line entirely.
Tom Davis is the youth of today. Congratulations, Tom.
Yeah, literally. That's
quite the time.
The voice of his generation.
This is true. Right.
Absolutely. Do you feel, Tom, that you are in some way representative of your generation? Do you feel? How old are you, by the way?
I'm 19.
Are you? Right.
It's quite a title to represent my whole generation. And, well, I don't know if I sort of come under the sort of stereotypical categories of my generation. So I don't know if I would say I represent my whole generation, but I certainly am one of my own generation.
Tom, what's your official title at the University of Lincoln in terms of level one BA honours communications and public relations? What is your title?
My titles? Yeah. So Mr.
As in student ambassador.
Oh, student ambassador, yes. I even forget that I'm that at some point.
There we are.
I haven't been able to exercise that role that often, so...
But it's still a title that's there. So as student ambassador, clearly you represent your generation. QED.
Well, and he has diplomatic immunity, right? Doesn't he?
I would hope so. We all need that.
I don't know if it sounds this way to everybody else, but if Tom truly is the voice of his generation, representative of his generation, I will know that I've met someone of his generation when I hear the lovely reverb.
Yes,
they do speak in reverb, young people these days, don't they? we've got stereo presenters on the guests on the radio show, and we also have reverb voice. It's amazing. It's amazing what we can do. It's a sort of digital manipulation. You of course will be able to talk about Paul the digital end of things because you're a bit of a whiz on all that stuff.
And in fact, Paul, I know you'll have done your research on both Philip and Phil Linus. Who would you like to put your embarrassing question to effectively cause more humiliation on the Midweek Drive? Go for it. Well, let's face it, guys, I'll have to say, Paul has become a father for the second time. Literally, how old is the child now?
She's 4 weeks this week on Monday.
Well,
so
congratulations.
Like congratulations.
Thank you.
My condolences. But the... that's the explanation for the two Pauls. Suddenly I realize he needs to be two of them. He's got two kids.
He's been pulled in every direction and he's just fallen apart into two.
I know it's not great radio to just keep referring to what we're seeing, but I am fascinated watching for the moment when one Paul does something different than the
exactly. other. Exactly. It's like that thing in Mad Magazine that always made me laugh and makes me laugh to this day. Until I tried your new Wonder Bodybuilding course, I was a 7-stone weakling. I am now two separate gorillas. The idea of two entirely separate gorillas.
And it's fair to say, because of the Cybernaut Club, Paul Powers occasionally likes to actually have the whole thing up on Zoom as a video. He's done this with Robin Pierce in the past. He's done it with the past episodes of the Midweek Drive. So there may well be a visual aspect in here as well. Anyway, Paul, back to where we were. Whom would you like to speak to? Whom would you like to question?
I am a little bit hesitant because I've got a question that I don't know the answer to.
You've come to the right place, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. This is the home of the permanently bewildered, isn't it?
So I have my question is for Philip Herdwood.
Oh, God. Philip. Here we go.
I had a look at your filmography and I noticed that you were in one of my all-time favorite films, which is Educating Rita.
Oh my, that's a long time ago. Yeah, yeah.
I think is 1983. So I was I was two when that came out.
Gosh, well, I wasn't much older actually, as you can see.
So what was that like? Because
it was really, I really enjoyed it an enormous amount. You know, it was great fun to shoot that film. No, actually, I had an embarrassing moment on that film. Wait for this. There was one particular scene, I remember it so vividly because I wanted the ground to swallow me up. There was one scene where I had to trot down the stairs with another actor, and I was talking about something that the Michael Caine character had said and saying, do you know, he actually said, and I thought, I'll do it in Michael Caine's voice. So we're shooting, you know, and I come down and I said, do you know, he actually said, I think you should study a bit more Bertolt Brecht or whatever it was. And the director said, cut, Phil, he said, Phil, he said, I know what you're trying to get at. He said, but no, I don't think it's not going to work for me, that one. But anyway, he said, Mike, come over here. As a young actor, you can do your voice. Along comes Michael Caine, you know, legend, Hollywood icon. He comes along and he said, so you can do my voice. I said, he said, go on in, do it. So I'm standing there on location, on set with the whole crew and other members of the cast. And he says, go on then, do it. So I'm standing there. What the heck am I going to say?
Sorry, There's an edit already.
Yeah. I thought, what the heck am I going to say? So I said, do you know that if a man falls from the top of the Empire State Building dressed in a Harris Tweed suit, he will take exactly 3.5 seconds to hit the ground? Not a lot of people know that. And he said, that was very good. One of us must go. He said, it won't be me. As you can imagine, I wanted the ground to swallow. I was red-faced and sweating and thinking, I want to die. I don't want to be here anymore. But anyway, it was okay. But that was my embarrassing moment. So I've combined two things, the film and an embarrassing moment. So there you are.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much. Myself and the wife, we're going to watch Educating Rita tonight because she's never actually seen it.
Oh, really? Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, tell her to watch out for the skinny young thing in the with the hairstyle.
Tiger. Yeah, you're called Tiger.
That's right. Yeah. I remember there was a fellow I used to know knock around with at one stage. He used to always call me Tigger when he met me. I said it was Tiger, and this is back when the film was made. I said it's Tiger is the character, not Tigger. Oh, that's right, Tigger. Right, Tiggs. Right, thanks very much. Anyway, there we are.
Baby.
I mean, yeah,
clearly, Philip, over nigh on 40 years, nearly 40 years, certainly 35 years of actually doing these shows. And it's our first edit. Thank Lord it's the pre-record, so I can actually take that one out, basically.
Well, I do apologise. My bad.
Philip, potty mouth, Herdwood. Okay, Phil Linus, who would you like to throw a question to?
Well, I just I felt for you when he decided to drop an F-bomb in the middle of what had been until then a relatively pleasant experience. It became a somber occasion at the drop of a hat. But I have been doing a podcast for 14 years, and in the last year and a half, we've started going live as a radio show. And since then, it has been as if I've demanded that my co-hosts swear throughout the show, which requires so much quick editing and bleeping. And finally, this week, I said, you know, it's been a year and a half on the radio. And his excuse was, I'm Canadian. I don't know what that means.
It's the Bears or the Mounties. Got to be one of the two, something like that.
Back to yourself, Paul. going well so far. Where would you like to go to now?
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask the other Phil.
Had both Phils in vision at the same time.
Not in stereo, I might add, but similar.
It's a beautiful experience. So, Phil, I read that you have in the past been a stand-up comedian, which is something that, you know, I absolutely love and adore. Like, I love stand-up comedy, love podcasting. So obviously Joe Rogan is like a huge hero of mine. And, you know, I've recently just found out about your podcast, so I'm definitely going to be checking that out soon. And I'll promote that on the cybernaut.club website.
It's the chillpackhollywoodhour.com.
Yeah, chillpackhollywoodhour.com. So what was your why did you get into stand-up comedy? You know, you went to the Comedy Store in Hollywood. So what was that like? And have you got any interesting stories from that time?
That's one question. All right. First off, we recently did on Chilpack Hollywood Hour a two-part episode all about pursuing careers in live comedy that you might find really fun. It was a panel discussion that I moderated, really funny, but really fascinating and insightful about the different reasons people gravitate towards a career and why they keep going. And what has the experience of pandemic been like for people whose careers are live comedy, right? And so that would be the first thing I would say. I fell in love with comedy very early on. I don't know whether this was actually the original impetus, but I did have a rule in my household that I could get away with saying anything, in much the way that Phil Hurdwood does not get away with saying.
Thanks for reminding me.
I could get away with saying everything, provided it was a direct quote and I gave a citation. That opened the doorway to Richard Pryor albums and George Carlin albums. Language for any occasion and for any feeling or mood. So I fell in love with this. I've always written. So I love words. I love combining words in ways that people hadn't thought of to create different perceptions. This has been true for me before I even fell in love with cinema. So the concept of the word was probably my in. In terms of the Comedy Store, I had been performing live. I'd been writing comedy. And I went in and my first night went pretty well. So I was immediately invited back. And the next time back, Mitzi Shore, the legendary owner of the Comedy Store, mother of Pauly Shore, who some of you might remember, who currently exists in the Where Are They Now column. His mother, Mitzi Shore, was this impresario, legendary impresario of comedy. And she came to see my set the next week. And she had seen a tape, I understood, or heard a tape of the previous week. And she calls me aside and she says, why did you cut out the piece about X? And I don't even remember what it was. And I said, well, because they laughed, that worked. I was really curious about whether I could take this other piece and rewrite it and get that to work. And she said, comedians keep what works and cut out what doesn't work. You, my friend, are a writer.
Oh.
And it was so liberating to me. And at the same time, I was falling in love with the process of filmmaking and realizing that more than as a writer and an actor, I did want to become a director. I did want to get into editing because the process of film, especially comedy, is such that you get to keep exploring it in different ways and then create the one thing that is the purest expression of what you were exploring. And then you get to move on. And that's who I am. So I have hosted stand-up shows through the years. I have interviewed stand-ups. I have provided platforms for stand-ups. I've written parts in movies for stand-ups because I find something about them innately so compelling that I give them an opportunity, hopefully, to do something they've never done before. But I am not a stand-up.
But wonderfully, Philip, of course, given that we've just celebrated National Stand-Up Week in Britain, and we'll be doing a feature about how we should stand up to keep us healthy and fit coming up after this particular piece, which also follows a fascinating item we did earlier on how you should actually protect your cats from being sunburnt. Very important, protecting your cats from being sunburnt, which is all critical. I noticed you were raising your mug there to signify a wondrousness there with the Spock routine. I will raise my TJ Hooker mug in comparison. So
we can't see it, Alex. We can't see it. It's part of the. It's your Aurora Borealis mug.
So. I will actually sort of change that then and make sure that you can actually see the mug before we actually ask those last two questions, which I know we've reached that time already where we actually have to sort of adjust things. things accordingly. So there we are. Greetings. Welcome to, of course, one of the finest series. One to check out, I would have thought, Thomas, for your good self, Heather Locklear, James Darren, and, of course, William Shatner, who was a joy to work with, according to Armin Shimerman, in, of course, the wonderful world of Boston Legal. If only you asked about Boston Legal, Paul, completely different zone entirely. But never mind.
I know. Went down on Seinfeld or Star Trek. Or the obvious one.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine. You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's okay. It's okay. He's back with us. I'm keeping you apart for a wee while, but we'll coordinate.
No, going for the deep cut is actually a bold move, and it can really lead to friendships. If, as an interviewer, you go for the deep cut, they appreciate that. But again, you need to know the answer.
Philip, would you like to ask the team those last two questions or select the folk? I would hand it over to Philip Herdwood, but frankly, I don't know what he's going to drop on us this time. Who knows?
My mic. I'll drop the mic.
So Phil Linus from Los Angeles, put the questions to Thomas, to Paul, and to Philip.
To Tom, the voice of his generation, have you enjoyed your maiden voyage on the Midweek Drive?
Absolutely. It's been very... very interesting to be involved in. I certainly want to be involved in the future.
And can we look forward to seeing you and your absolutely terrific hair on a future installment of the Midweek Drive?
Absolutely. And I'll be representing my generation at each step of the way.
Excellent.
Now, I'm concerned that with Paul, I will get two answers. Which will make me both happy and sad for him. Paul's, have you enjoyed today's connection with us on the Midweek Drive?
I've got to tell you, this has been my favorite so far. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And thank you, Alex, for the ripping.
No, I mean, yeah, I could have brought Robin Pierce on as well after the 2 hours you did with him on Cybernaut Club, but never mind. It's all a quick plug for Cybernaut Club. How can people access it? Who knows? You'll probably Tom Phillip.
Yeah, it's cybernaut.club. I've recently updated the website, so you can just go to one place now and you can access all of the social medias on there and get in touch. And if you've got something interesting to say or a project that you want to talk about, you can come on. We'll do a podcast. We'll talk about it.
Wow.
And can we look forward to you coming on to this show again in the near future?
Yeah, I hope so. If Alex will have me.
Alex has nowhere else to go. It's just a revolving door of, I mean, he's lost his mind. He's gone through a year of virtual backdrops in this one episode. I still don't know how to do it. I only just learned that it's rude to drink coffee on Zoom, and yet I've been doing it the whole time.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, thanks for having me. Phil Herdwood, have you had a great time?
I've had an absolutely fabulous time, and I've really enjoyed every minute of it, and thank you very much.
Can we look forward to hearing your dulcet tones again soon?
Oh, you bet your life.
Alex, Linus, back to you.
Has it been good for your good self? Have you literally gone on the beach?
Oh, goodness. Whether I can see the TJ Hooker cup or not, you always have a lovely mug, Alex, and it's delightful to see it.
And I take it you'll be back again in the not-too-distant future.
Who can answer those things off the top of their head?
Phil Herdwood, Phil Linus, Paul Powers, and Tom Davis. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And up next, as promised, how to protect your cat from sunburn.
Absolutely vital knowledge.
Well, it may seem a little bit ironic to be speaking about sun protection awareness and other such things, given the weather we're currently actually experiencing, especially as we are actually in Sun Awareness Week, proving that irony is not lost when it comes to meteorology. However, given that we will doubtless be actually having some sun and enjoying some sun over the next few months and so on, it's maybe important to actually consider the importance of keeping our cats and our feline friends safe from the aspects of the UV rays and so on, and to talk us through ways in which cats can be protected, and indeed how to be aware of cats who are suffering from sunburn. We're delighted to actually welcome from the Cats Protection Central Base, or Cats Protection League, the Central Veterinary Officer, Dr. Sarah Elliott. How are you, Sarah?
I'm fine, thank you. Not too bad.
Now, I think it's fair to say that most folk probably back in the day harboured on the illusion, well, they've got fur, they can't be sunburned and so on. But of course, that's a complete fallacy. Cats can suffer from sunburn just as we can as human beings, presumably.
Yes, I think it's something that maybe we don't recognize so often, but definitely cats that have pale colored fur and or sort of on areas of the body where the fur's quite thin, so the tips of the ears and nose and lips and sometimes on the abdomen as well, it's possible for them to catch the sun there and to get sunburn. So yeah, it's something that I think perhaps we don't recognize so much.
Yeah, and again, on a serious note, it's interesting to see that the Cats Protection has actually seen three cats brought to their adoption centres, or your adoption centres, with sunburned ear tips that also had turned cancerous, and then obviously had to be removed. So it is a very serious sort of aspect for our cat friends.
Yes, and we do see cases year on year at Cats Protection where cats with white ears or white sort of pale colouring, they have picked up the sun, they've caught some sunburn, and it does take a bit of gradual exposure, but over time that can turn into skin cancer. And once it gets to a certain point, the only real treatment for that is to remove that surgically. So often when it is the tips of their ears affected, they do lose their ears through surgery. So just the sort of the earlobe sort of area, really. So it does make them a bit unusual. And it is something that it's best avoided if we can. So I think it's a good thing just to be aware of, just to have how to keep your cat free from sunburn this year.
So what advice, Sarah, would you actually give to cat owners who might be listening to this and again, maybe not have been aware of the challenges within this whole thing? What are the kind of key thoughts you'd suggest?
Well, Cats Protection have a few top tips, and we've got some of those on our website as well to look at. The main one is going to be to keep your cat indoors if possible when the sun's at its hottest. So typically between 10 in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, if that's possible, just to keep them indoors. Alternatively, if they aren't going to be outside, then it's quite a good idea to provide plenty of shade in the garden. So like providing large cardboard boxes in the garden if you can, or just some plant pots placed close together, or some garden furniture nearby that they can get some shade underneath. You can speak to your vet about suitable sunscreen for pet cats, but just be aware that there's not really that many sort of sunscreens on the market in this country for cats. And some of the baby high factor sunscreens for human babies are possible to put on cats, but just check with your vet about the ingredients, because some of them do contain things like zinc that can be a bit toxic to cats, and they do lick it off as well. So I think some of the just providing shade and making sure the cat doesn't get directly exposed to the sun at those hot days probably going to be the most important things that you can do.
And generally, is it the same as for human beings, that basically if the weather forecast predicts sort of high weather or high UV conditions, etc., keep them indoors, and as you said, follow the guidelines that you've just suggested?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just having that little bit of awareness that when the sun's at its hottest, it could cause some high UV exposure for cats, and then they could get sunburn. And as we know, cats are notoriously sun lovers, and they do enjoy sort of basking in the sun. They have sort of a descendancy from the African wildcat, our domestic cats. So they've got that sort of high sun tolerance and that sort of desert ancestry that they quite enjoy lying in the sun for quite a long period.
Well, that was something I was certainly going to ask, Sarah, because I remember both the cats that I actually had over the years, etc., they like their sunbathing. I mean, they sort of really like to sort of stretch out on a day when the sun was shining through the windows and all sorts of other areas. So is there something that basically we just need to be aware of, that actually, yeah, they might enjoy it, but be careful that they're protected as well?
Yeah, and I think sometimes, I mean, they're very independent, so they're quite good at looking after themselves. But I think in some cases, I think sometimes they can enjoy the sun a bit too much. And I think get really comfortable there and not necessarily realise that they are getting a bit of sunburn. I think just like with us, really. So it's good just to sort of keep an eye out on their behalf and just try and restrict that a little bit if you can.
I think the shade idea is actually excellent. I wouldn't like to actually have ever attempted to actually put any sun cream or anything else on my own sort of cats. I think they would definitely sort of have rebelled quite vociferously about that whole side of things. But that's by the way. Where can people go to find out further information, Sarah, about this particular topic and indeed Cats Protection?
Well, it would be great if people could visit the Cats Protection website. That's www.cats.org.uk. We've got our top tips on there for how to keep your cats safe in the summer. And we've got a little quiz that owners can do as well, just to check that they're going to be sun savvy this year for their cats. So that's a really good thing to look at.
And do you have any cats yourself, Sarah?
I don't at the moment. I'm in between cats, is I guess what they say. But yeah, I'm always on the lookout, and I think we've got plenty to choose from at Cats Protection. So yeah, it's kind of a bit of a shop floor for me at work sometimes, but definitely on our website as well. There's plenty of cats up for adoption at the moment. So if and we have plenty of cats available.
Absolutely. Dr. Sarah Elliott from Cats Protection, huge thanks. And thank you once again, Sarah, for the perfect interview. I couldn't resist it. What the hey?
Thank you.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
Wiggle it, waggle it, don't just sit on it. That's the motto that's coming through today, very much courtesy of Public Health England. And of course, it's time for the annual sitting survey. I'll say that again, the annual sitting survey. We're spending far too much time on our rear ends and to actually address the importance of actually getting up, standing up, wiggling it, waggling it, doing all those kind of things. We're delighted to welcome a genuine dynamic duo. First of all, the founder and managing director of Active Walking. That's the fabulous Gavin Bradley. In fact, it's Active Working as well. Active Working and Walking, Gavin.
Indeed. All movement. We love all movement.
Precisely. And indeed, somebody who's always got skills and moves, and the moves on the pitch, absolutely, quite frankly, amazing. A wonderful rugby union player extraordinaire and founder of Work Athlete. That's Rob Vickerman. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, very good, thank you, Alex. Currently waggling and wiggling it, I believe, as Gavin keeps telling me.
Yeah, don't get me started on a 1980s, 1990s zig and zag moment, otherwise that'll go into a whole lot of ending tears. Let's turn to Gavin first and foremost. With respect to the annual sitting survey, were you surprised by how much time, quite literally, we're spending as a nation on our backsides?
Sadly not. We were sitting too much before the pandemic, and and during the pandemic, we have lost so much activity, up to 5,000 steps a day of activity, which is huge throughout the day. But 2/3 of us are saying that we're sitting longer. And there's been a trebling of those who are sitting for dangerously prolonged periods. That's 90 minutes at a time. So trebling of that dangerous number. So we need to be conscious of sitting less and moving more throughout the day, but most importantly, breaking up the prolonged sitting period. So we should be moving, having light movement, and starts with standing for at least 10 minutes an hour.
And of course, the benefits of actually getting up and about are presumably manifold and fairly obvious. I mean, you feel fitter, you feel better, and generally you have less challenges with respect to the sort of statutory fossilized shapes that one can get into.
Absolutely. And there's oxygen flow to the brain, most importantly. I mean, this is where we've seen huge issues regarding mental health in COVID. A lot of it is related to prolonged sitting and not being able to get out and about and socialize, of course, too. But sitting is a defensive position. We should do it mindfully and for limited periods. It is not a prolonged state for the body. We're not designed for it.
Rob, turning to yourself, I mean, when you were obviously at the top of your game in terms of rugby oriented, et cetera, presumably sitting down was the last thing you had to do, even though you might have had a tough half-time team talk to be faced with.
Well, it's really interesting, isn't it? In the back end of my career, smartwatches started coming around, so people got used to looking at data and understanding it. And actually found when I stuck my watch on a training day and wrapped it up a few times, because it's not particularly down with health and safety, that as an elite professional rugby player, I was moving less than I am now. As a retired sportsman who now is, you know, obviously leading quite an active life with the work we do with Work Athlete, but really is interesting. And of all the people that we monitor, it tends to be when the people are at home doing their daily chores and activities, their step count is phenomenally high. We're talking 12 to 15,000 steps a day with incidental movement around the house. And that's not accounting for people who perhaps go for that 5K run and get their steps in that way. So actually just incidental movement makes you far more active than a sports person, believe it or not.
And Gavin, that particular sort of finding, I mean, I've noticed, obviously, because we're using the magic of Zoom, that you are still moving around like some kind of whirling dervish, even as we speak at this moment in time, which is great, putting into practice what you're preaching. That is something which clearly sort of impacts in terms of our overall well-being, presumably.
Absolutely. I mean, we need to think outside the box here. We need to take, most importantly, we take responsibility for our own health. We're now working a lot. Most of us will be working from home indefinitely. Not for all period days, but maybe 2 days a week. So we need to create new routines. We need to build in activity throughout the day. We are much more productive. We've increased our productivity as a country, but what we have reduced is our wellness at a cost. So we need to take personal responsibility for this. Today is all about doing that first steps of awareness. So on your feet is about working, is taking, doing Zoom calls standing, taking your phone calls walking, using every opportunity to have those stretches throughout the day, and do them to, by yourself and do them with others, because we need to engage together. We are creatures of social creatures, and we need to share our experience.
Rob, you raised a really interesting point about, obviously, the difference between your time as a professional and your time, obviously, as indeed founder of Work Athlete, etc. Are there any bad habits that you've fallen into? Because I'm conscious people might be listening to this and say, we can't all be fantastic rugby players like Rob. How can we cope with this?
Well, there's nothing about sport about this one. This is just about everyday activity in life, and tend to find that it starts with, as Gavin mentioned, these software types of changes. So just having an awareness of how much you're sitting. If indeed you are there in pain, which many listeners may well be, because that's the general society we see at the moment. But how can movement help that? How can you set reminder every 45 minutes just to clear the room, to walk around, to use a door frame to stretch in? And once you start accruing all of these tiny little changes, the impact is just phenomenal. You'll find people being happier, they'll be healthier, they'll be running upstairs without being out of breath. And those little types of incidents only come through these small, tiny changes. And then when you think about hardware, how people can adjust their surroundings to benefit them. I'm getting no credit here whatsoever, by the way, has been standing as well. But I, like Gavin, stand for every single video meeting. And it's not a difficult thing to set up. And then it's about making sure that once you've done that for a prolonged period of time, it feels strange if you then sit in for a call. I sound different when I'm sitting down. I act differently. And I'm certainly someone that's recognised that early enough to make it my lifelong way of working.
Gavin, it would seem as though we actually need a national on your feet year as opposed to a national on your feet month.
Well, we have Getting Britain Standing as our media campaign master. It's where you can find out all the information. You can first of all do your own sitting calculator to work out and then what risks you are at, because it's all rates to the individual. So On Your Feet Day is just the one day for us to help download posters, get a bit of fun into it. I mean, I might sound a bit serious here because I'm very passionate about the subject, but we need to bring a bit of fun into it so that we can share it with others and enjoy it, because it's really quite simple. So and there's lots of materials. We have live yoga, you can win standing desks, there's even coloring in competitions. So it's On Your Feet, it's all about having fun and sharing it with your nearest, dearest and your colleagues.
And presumably with the yoga, you'll avoid the lotus position, because that's obviously sitting down as well. So it could be problematic. Yeah,
well, as long as it's stretching or movement, that's fine. It's fine. It's the static positions which
we have to give Alex a bit of credit for knowing about yoga there. That's well done. Getting a great day on that.
Listen, there are times I could actually go into all sorts of other aspects, but let's just not go there, okay? It's just because the Vedic yoga is just far too stressful for even, I think, high energy rugby players. Listen, let's just go back to Gavin. Could you share with us once again the key websites? Where can people go to find out more details?
Yes, if you go to onyourfeetday.com, and there you'll be able to download lots of lovely posters, and they're not boring. They're really quite fun. We've given them a fresh look this year, really colourful. And you can also go to Get Britain Standing to find more information about your own sitting calculator and all the health risks and their medical and scientific evidence they're relating to.
And of course, you have clearly prevented us from actually going into James and Sit Down, because that would be inappropriate in all sorts of ways. So we'll step away from that completely and stand up. Maybe James need to actually rewrite that whole song, basically. And actually,
well, how about Tub Thumper? Go for that one, Alex. That would be good. I get knocked down, but I get up again. There we go.
Exactly. A little bit of Chumbawamba. It's the way forward, quite clearly. Rob Vickerman and Gavin Bradley, huge thanks. Keep on keeping on and keep standing, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex.
You can never know what it's like. Your blood like winter freezes just like ice. And there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. And I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces. Still standing. to hope to win. You're starting down the road, leaving me again. The threats you made were meant to cut me down. And if my love was just a circus, you'd be a clown by now.